In this episode, we discuss The Spirit, exactly the film Will Eisner would have made if Will Eisner was Frank Miller. Hey everyone, welcome to the Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Yeah.
Woo!
It's the podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
And boy, did we ever and will we ever.
Mm-hmm. But first off, I'm glad to see you guys.
Yeah, it's been a little while,
glad to see you too.
Yeah. So I went to Costa Rica, and before that, Elliot went to Uruguay. When are you going to have your adventures south of the border, Stuart?
I don't know. They don't like me down there.
Really? What did you do?
I don't want to go into it. It has something to do with marsupials.
Hmm.
Okay. Usually those are found in Australia.
I know, yeah. That's...
Did you...
I'm not allowed back to Australia.
Did you import an animal into a country where the ecosystem couldn't handle it? Like the end of The Simpsons, where the...
Or do you just have sex with a koala?
I'm not at liberty to discuss my situation with marsupials. But for that reason, I'm not allowed to go south of the border anymore.
I say, yeah.
By south of the border means... He doesn't go down on women, ladies.
I don't know.
Wow, we already are swimming in the gutter.
Yeah,
we are.
I didn't even do it.
We are face first. I know. I'm looking at you to say, can you believe this?
I know.
Not to blame you.
It's like the movie The Spirit. It starts out in the sewer. Yeah, and then
does it? I don't remember.
Yeah, sure.
I thought it began in a desert.
No, that was the production logo for Odd Lot Pictures.
The first scene of note is the fight. Between the spirit.
But that's not in the sewer. That's in like a mud flat somewhere.
But it's clearly meant to be
toilets.
Like, yeah, they're
it's
hitting
not,
each other with toilets.
It's not subterranean though. There's buildings behind them.
I'm saying that
it's
I
hard
think
to
that
tell
that's
though
because
it's
not
clearly shot on like a soundstage.
Yeah, well, it's a shot in front of a green screen, like almost the entire film.
I think that Gabriel Macht was fighting in raw sewage. He personally requested it for verisimilitude. So,
yeah.
So what movie did we watch?
We watched The Spirit. Frank Miller's Will Eisner's The Spirit.
It's kind of like this. The possessive on the title is like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein or Bram Stoker's Dracula, where they meant it to say, I guess, is it because is this, did they call this movie Will Eisner's The Spirit or is it just The Spirit?
They called it The Spirit.
Because I remember seeing Will Eisner's The Spirit in earlier like press releases about it, and it was the same way that like, it's supposed to mean this is the closest adaptation you've ever seen of this story. Mm-hmm. But what it really means is like, listen, we're gonna play all sorts of fast and loose and crazy with this story.
Yeah,
Waits is gonna be Renfield.
Yeah, to me, it sounds
that was
like
one of the best things in that movie.
Well, that's true.
To me, it's like Frank Miller is playing keep away with the movie, and he's like, "Yep, it's Will Eisner's movie. It's his fault."
Mm-hmm.
There's like it's maybe the worst adaptation of Will Eisner's vision that I can imagine, since
yeah,
it's nothing like his style or tone or characters.
You're forgetting the short-lived A Contract with God 1970s cartoon show.
Yeah, the Saturday morning cartoon in which Jewish characters living in a tenement had adventures. Yeah,
that joke was for approximately two people in the audience, I'm pretty sure, but anyway.
Yeah,
no. So
or the,
this movie
or the,
really
the Broadway
good.
Musical version of Life on Another Planet.
Nice. Yeah, this movie is really good. It it had a dude who you know, the spirit, who was like a crime fighting superhero type, mm-hmm. who is mirrored by his bad guy, the octopus, who.
Because the enemy of any fedora bedecked crime fighter is an octopus.
Yep, and he's exactly like him. Only slightly different.
Only completely different in every way.
Yeah, he had really good costumes.
No. Well, should we bother going over the plot of this movie? Or?
Well, I would appreciate it, Elliot, just so I could see how you might summarize it, because I didn't understand most
okay.
of it.
Okay, well, we're in Central City, a city made out of CGI, which is supposed to be kind of film noir-ish, mm-hmm. except it's...
And styrofoam blocks, I think. There's a lot of styrofoam blocks.
Yeah, it looks... Every inch of it is super fake and artificial. And we're introduced to the spirit, a man in a suit and a fedora and a mask who works with the police department and solves crimes and seems to be Wolverine-ish in that he can take any amount of damage and then he comes back from it.
And his character was adapted from the popular American spirit cigarettes. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, he was originally a Native American.
He doesn't actually seem to feel any pain either, or am I...
It depends on some parts of the movie he does and some he doesn't. Like sometimes he shrugs it off and other times he's like,
like when he gets hit in the crotch by a novelty oversized wrench.
Yes, mm-hmm. Or when a sword goes through his chest.
Oh yeah, he didn't like that.
No, but anyway, he's got a mat on, as the kids would say.
That's really you'd have to be really strong to shove that giant sword because that was like a machete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like it wasn't like a fucking like a fencing.
Yeah,
sword,
there was
like
no
point. It was enormous. Well, but
it was
I mean,
like a chopping sword, and she shoved it all the way through a human body. And yeah, like she's not a large woman.
No.
And nor did she get any, like...
She had no leverage.
No momentum or anything. She just, like, pushed it up there. She's like fucking Vicky from A Small Wonder, you know? Vicky was the robot, right?
I don't know.
Did Vicky in Small Wonder often shove swords through men's chests?
No, but she'd be, like, standing there and, like, pick up a couch with no visible leverage, and it just looks so ridiculous. Like, she would tip over, even if she's a robot. It's not like her feet are really wide or something.
I think you need to write a letter about this and send it through a time portal.
You need to take into account that she's very heavy as a robot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, metal. Well, she's made out of steel, mm-hmm. and also fat, so, you know. She's not, actually. She was the normal size for a little girl. Anyway, so the spirit is the protector of Central City, which involves running around on rooftops and occasionally beating up criminals. He has a somewhat romantic relationship with the daughter of the police chief, but also falls in love with every other woman that he meets. And he's on the trail of a crime boss called the Octopus, played by Samuel Jackson in the widest possible way. The reason they had to shoot it in a CGI soundstage is so that he could not chew the scenery, literally.
Yeah.
There was no scenery for him to eat. That's why they had to do it that way.
He wore a sombrero the first time.
But he pops up. Here's the thing. The Spirit is based on a comic book by Will Eisner, who is one of the founding fathers of American comic books. Which was about this police detective who gets beat up a lot. He's called the Spirit. He gets beat up a lot. He solves mysteries, but he's like a smart guy who also bumbles. And it's more fun than anything else. And
it's not really big on like continuity. I mean, most of the stories.
Well, there's a certain amount. There's a lot of standalone stories, but
yeah. Well, I certainly feel like towards the later adventures, like Will Eisner was more interested in testing out his theories about like what comics could be and layout than telling like a story that's centered around the spirit specifically.
That's the thing. It started out as like a crime comic and then became just Will Eisner experimenting with comics as much as he could. But
which was great.
Which is great. They were always entertaining. But like the tone of them was always fairly light for the most part.
Not a lot of angst.
Not a lot of angst. And also the Octopus, his villain, was a shadowy crime boss. All you ever saw of him was his gloves. You never saw his face. So, of course, Frank Miller recognizes this by having Samuel L. Jackson very loudly and openly play the character, first with a sombrero on his head. Later on, he's dressed like a samurai. Later, he's dressed like a Nazi for no reason. Then he's got a huge fur coat and like a fur hat on. It feels like Frank Miller was waiting for Will Eisner to die so that he could just do whatever he wanted with this movie.
Yeah.
I'd like the Octopus if he was more of a clothes horse. That's what he said.
Yeah, at times it makes me feel like Frank Miller was, over the years, he'd gotten really tired of people being like, Dark Knight's okay, but the Spirit, now that's good comics. And he's like secretly stewing like, fuck that Will Eisner guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't deserve all this credit. And then finally, when he gets the chance, he's like, I'm going to make this fucking movie. And he makes it as shitty as possible so that everybody's like, the Spirit? Oh yeah, that's that shitty movie that nobody likes. Rather than the comic that Eisner made.
Well, also, and let's not forget, also, there's the character Sans Serif, the femme fatale played by Eva Mendes, who was the Spirit's childhood girlfriend. And then there was some misfortune, she left Central City and became the world's greatest jewel thief. And she's somehow mixed up in shenanigans with the Octopus.
Oh, yeah.
And Scarlett Johansson as some sort of scientist / henchman.
She's like a Girl Friday to the Octopus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who is the head of an international drug organization, yet has no henchmen aside from Scarlett Johansson and an army of cloned buffoons.
Yeah.
And you see very
much
little
of lisping clones.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like it's the same way that Lex Luthor in the Superman movies is a criminal genius, but he surrounds himself with bumbling idiots.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really make sense. But anyway, this is a crackerjack film. deftly told.
In that you might find it in a box of Cracker Jacks.
The movie is an almost incoherent mess. The pacing is terrible. By the time when the movie was over, I was saying to Dan and Stuart, it felt like we had just seen the 10-minute mini movie at the beginning of like the Spirit the movie, and then the real movie was going to start. Like this was the adventure that Bond would go on. That didn't really make a lot of sense and was just a lot of stunts before the title sequence, before the real movie. But no, it was the whole movie.
Yeah, it was really bad.
And Frank Miller has this kind of obsession with Eva Mendes' butt.
Well, he has an obsession with women. I mean, it's not surprising that the Spirit character would fall in love with every woman he sees, as the film is full of a Hollywood movie is going to have pretty women in it, but like. Literally, he seems to go out of his way to make as many women in as little clothes as possible throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the movie is trying to be tongue-in-cheek and never gets there, you know.
Well, to be tongue-in-cheek, you have to have some sort of, like, rational, logical basis and then, you know, like, skew off to the side. Whereas this movie, like, the visual style matched the content in that the fact that it was all shot on a soundstage meant that individual pictures were very pretty, but nothing had any relation to anything else spatially. And likewise, nothing in the plot felt like it had any relation to anything else.
Now, speaking of plot and stuff, the octopus guy, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, he's in addition to being a super villain and like a master drug lord.
Oh, and also he's
like a super scientist, right?
Apparently, in this. And yeah. Also, like the Spirit, the octopus can be injured a dozen times over and it can't be killed.
He's a Looney Tunes character, basically.
Yeah.
But he's like a super genius scientist with like genetic serums and shit.
Yeah.
And he injects the Spirit with some kind of a serum and then himself that makes them, you know, pretty invulnerable.
That's the backstory.
But then later on he finds out, hey, wait a minute. If one of us drinks the blood of Heracles, sure. If one of us drinks the blood of the Greek hero, who apparently in this world is an actual...
That's the other thing. Is the movie is going along in its way, and then it suddenly becomes... They're talking to the Spirit about their plan. They go, we want to be immortal like the gods. Luckily, the gods had sex with human women and created half-breed heroes. We found the blood of Heracles, and it's like... Suddenly the movie has taken this left turn to a universe where Zeus is real and the Greek pantheon actually exists. And you want the Spirit to be like, wait a minute, hold on, stop right there. Okay, you're a criminal, I get it, let's hold on. So you're saying that all this time people have been worshiping Jesus or, you know, the Muslim god or the Jewish god or the Hindu gods, but really it was the Greek pantheon that was real and exists and we should be worshiping.
Or even like, okay, if these guys existed... What does that mean about other gods? Is it possible that other gods, like, could Thor be flying
around?
That's
possible,
like,
too.
Is the twilight of the gods upon us? Is Ragnarok here? Who knows? He doesn't ask these questions. Yeah. Instead, he just goes along
What about Marduk?
Hey,
what about, you know, Tiamat? Where are they?
Yeah, where are they? Like, hidden in the bowels of the earth?
Where's Baal?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. So, that's really weird. And they don't really address, you know, how he figured out that... You know what? The only thing that my serum needs to be 100% complete is for me to drink some Hercules blood, and then I'll be immortal. And if anyone else drinks Hercules blood, they'll fucking explode or something, or melt.
Like, somehow he knows what the drug interaction is. Like, if his serum had, like, a little warning label, it'd be like, if you add this to Hercules blood, maybe you're gonna become immortal.
Yeah, it's totally batshit. It doesn't make any sense at all.
But like a certain kind of movie can pull off that kind of craziness, and this does not.
And then in addition to that, not only is there this Hercules blood floating around, but the thing that ends up saving the Spirit in the end is the Golden Fleece that Jason and his Argonauts were seeking.
Yeah,
kind of weird. weird choices.
I wish I could have been working with Frank as Frank Miller's assistant through all of this, just to see his thought process.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, I read all the spirit stories. This is what I'm thinking. Hercules blood, golden fleece, yes, okay. Giant gun battle where he's shooting at helicopters, yes. Okay, the spirit of death is constantly trying to convince the spirit to come with her, perfect. Okay.
Okay, you know. Like an underwater makeout scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, with like a laser show?
I'm thinking the spirit climbs out of the ocean and there's a close-up of a toy dinosaur and we hear a roar and then we never go back to that ever again.
Yeah, that was strange.
I'm thinking that the octopus is vain, so he's always going to want to put on different outfits.
A lot of costumes, right?
A lot of costumes in the sewers. Like, but also love that he has his sewer headquarters, which has a dojo room and a Nazi room. Like, it's like a themed... Like one of those themed hotels that couples go to when absolutely. They're trying to the reignite their marriage. Yeah,
they're like, I didn't know what kind of supervillain I wanted to be, so I just had the architects put in one of
and
everything.
And that kind of goofiness could work if the movie was telling a halfway coherent story or was fun in
and
any
I,
way.
I would have liked the Nazi scene if they had cut to shots of them like preparing, like putting on their little Nazi costumes. Like, okay, I'm going to say this, and then you do this, okay? And then wheel out the kitty that we're going to.
Because it was very elaborately choreographed. Yeah.
Yeah, like I would have much preferred. That like that'd have been awesome.
And I also like the listener at home is hearing the convoluted MacGuffin to the story and thinking,
what, a vase full of Hercules's blood?
Yeah.
You're saying,
yeah, that remains fluid.
Like, it's remained fluid for what, 3,000 years? When was Heracles around?
There's no real date. I mean, I guess I could call up Zeus.
What I
well?
Love is that it's a vase that was inside of a crate, and I have to assume, and the crate was always on its side, so it's like. You're telling me the blood didn't just slosh right out of that vase? Like, I hope there was a stopper in the top of it or something.
Yeah,
like
made out of fucking beeswax and human hair or something. Like, what? What did they use back in ye olden days?
Before ye olden days.
Yeah, like way before.
It's the golden age of Greece.
Absolutely.
It's the age of heroes before ancient Greece.
Yeah, it's like pre-Troy.
Yeah.
But you'd think that all this like information would be like sort of parceled out by the movie and
over the length of its running time.
Instead, there was a scene in which I was like, I turned to Elliot and I was saying, "Has this scene been going on for 18 minutes? It really feels like this scene's been going on for 18 minutes." And it was just Samuel L. Jackson and Scarlett Johansson explaining precisely this. And at the end of it, I still couldn't understand what was supposed to be happening.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson looked really bored in that scene.
She looked bored throughout most of the movie. This is if you want to see, it's the same way that Star Wars Episode One is like a collection of actors' worst performances. This is that for the actors in the film.
I don't know. I thought Boss Nass gave a really good performance as the leader of the Gungans.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, he's been.
But I love his. You're implying that he's a real actor playing himself as the leader of the Gungans.
Well, he played him like Brian Dennehy or something. What the fuck?
I don't understand. Boss Nass hasn't made a lot of movies since then.
I thought Boss Nass got the Oscar for Marty.
No, you know, you're thinking of Ernest Borgnine.
All right.
Boss Nass won the Oscar for.
Rachel getting married.
Yeah, nobody won an Oscar for Rachel getting married.
Oh, I'm mistaken. So, yeah, now the spirit.
What were you going
to
say?
I don't know. Like, it was crazy. There was a. Obviously, it goes back to Frank Miller's love of Japanese shit.
Well, that's the thing. You can see each of his obsessions smashing into each other in a terrible way. Japanese stuff, film noir, women's boobs and asses.
Yep.
Trek. Like splatters of things in images. Mm-hmm. Venetian blinds, monochrome. Well, that falls under noir. Monochromatic stuff.
Converse All Stars.
Converse All Stars, which for some reason are like highlighted white. On the souls, the entire
just
movie.
Like if he was drawing.
The only thing that's not in it is like, I guess like cyborg technology weirdness, like stuff where people have a lot of wires coming out of them
of some kind.
But Samuel Jackson was bald.
There were bald clones.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, it's
they
like
were totally a Frank Millerism.
But I can't imagine people walking into this movie off the street not being familiar with Frank Miller. Like maybe they know Sin City the movie, and walking into it and being like, and just what they believed was going on in this film, why they thought it was happening. You know?
Yeah, like I would have gotten mad.
Why they thought it was happening in the sense of why is this happening to me?
Yeah,
I would have crunched up my box of goobers or whatever I had purchased, or my nachos, and stormed out.
Your
of the
box
theater.
Of nachos?
Yeah, that's what they sell, right? Like a box of nachos.
Oh, here, okay.
Nachos with like liquid cheese.
Here's 2 points I'd like to make. One is that they're both things that are set up as if they're important, but they're not ultimately, or maybe they are. There's a lot of talk where he's like, the octopus is like, "Don't you want to find out who you are or what you are?" to the spirit, and the story, spirit's backstory is that he's a cop who's been killed, and accident and chemicals brought him back to life, and now he's the spirit and he fights crime.
Yeah, he's invulnerable.
And in the comic, like, there seems to be no question less relevant to the character of the spirit than, like, who are you? Like, he's not fucking Wolverine.
Self-reflection.
He's just this guy who goes around and fights crime. Like, he's the least self-reflective hero.
He's not a guy
who's
going to stand in the rain and hold his arms out and be shot from above saying, "No!"
Probably not. And the other thing was something that Stuart kept bringing up, which is that he talks a lot about, like, my city needs me. My city is my lover. And we never get an idea of what kind of city the city is, except it's a vaguely run-down New York,
yeah,
in the 50s, in the 40s, in the 30s type city, Chicago-ish. Maybe there's a little bit of Newark in it. Like, I don't – the city is incredibly bland and generic, but he talks about it as if
it's
like –
it's between an ocean and a river, so it sounds like it's Manhattan. But
I mean, I hate to use – like compare it to, say, like Dark Knight or something, or even Batman Begins, but those are both movies where they're like the storyteller direct like clearly makes an effort – to show you the city, like
including
you,
like, well, even the like geography
Tim Burton's
of the city.
Batman too, like, yeah, even that,
or Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Where the city is made up of sculptures with buildings on top of their fingers. That's what, my favorite thing in that movie is there's an observatory. There's a huge, probably 300-foot tall statue of a human being reaching towards the stars, and there's an observatory building placed, yeah, on his hands. Like, how do you get into the building? I don't understand.
You don't realize. Yeah, that statue's completely solid.
Yeah. Listen, you have to climb into the Baba Yaga's chicken leg house, and she flies you up there
in her mortar and pestle. Yeah, yep. But they like we got to take the elevator up to the cranium of the statue, then we walk along the arms to get to the observatory.
We climb out of his nose and then walk up the arms. Duh.
Come on, where else are you going to build an observatory?
Yeah,
but anyway, yeah, like those movies, they create a sense of place.
Yeah, and this movie did none of that.
No.
It created a sense of place, and that place is a soundstage somewhere in Hollywood.
Somewhere in Robert Rodriguez's basement.
But it's like, and the movie opens with him talking about how, like, important his city is and, like, how much he loves it. And that's kind of like any time a movie begins or any kind of story begins, and they're like, this person is the most important person in the world. This guy is going to go defeat the Emperor in a couple of years because he's prophesied to be an awesome Jedi. Like, that type of bullshit where as soon as somebody tells you somebody's important, you don't care about them anymore.
Yeah.
You cease to give
a shit. Well, because you want it to be proven to you. It's the same way that, like, we saw the trailer for Crank 2 was on the DVD before this.
Okay.
And it shows a character tells a joke, and then it cuts to a shot from a different scene of a different character laughing. And my reaction to that is always like, fuck you, I don't need to know to laugh at your shitty joke. Like, I get it. It was supposed to be a joke. You don't need to cut to a character laughing to tell me it was. Like
I'm supposed to laugh along with this guy?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same way, like, if a character in the beginning of the movie is telling you, like, oh, this city means everything to me. It's like, well, you know, if you don't show me it does, then I don't care.
In any kind of a work of fiction, they try and show, like, a character who's, like, a painter, and they're like, this guy's such an amazing painter. And you're like, he's not that great. Or like that movie Lady in the Water where M. Night Shyamalan plays a writer who writes the most important book in the universe.
Plays the greatest writer in the world, yeah.
Yeah, that type of bullshit.
But it's just like the we never see the spirit. Like, I wanted there to be a scene where like the spirit like picks up a piece of litter and throws it in a garbage can and is like, not in my city. Or like caresses a building and be like, it was built in 1923. By such and such brothers. Like, that he just shows some interaction with the city he lives in,
right,
or,
yeah,
like,
well,
some interest in it.
One scene, I think, where there was interaction with the public. Like, one scene where he, like, saw, like, a kid on the street, and I forget.
There's two. He talks to a kid on the street, and there's one where he's hanging by his coat off of
a
gargoyle, and the people on the street are like, that guy looks like a jerk! What an idiot! Jump, jump, jump! And it's like, I thought you were the hero of the city! Like, you can either be the hero of the city that everyone loves, or you can be the pathetic, like, Spider-Man type hero that everyone hates even though he saves their lives. Like, can't be both of them.
Yeah, you know? And like everybody's attitude doesn't change until his pants fall down around his ankles and then these women immediately start like fucking creaming their jeans over it. Like, I don't know, but like a dude in his boxers, I don't think that's going to get him hot, especially when he's hanging for his, like, almost dying.
That might basically not be the most accurate reading of that scene. But it's also, that was a great scene because he's hanging from this, his overcoat, and his overcoat must be 50 feet long.
Oh, like, yeah, it's huge.
It's ridiculously, it's like he has Spawn's cape on his back, you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
You mean the Hellspawn, the character created by Todd McFarlane,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course, yeah. Sure. Oh, I can't remember the character's real name in that series.
I don't remember.
He's talking about Spawn Jones.
I remember that was one of the few comics where I read it as a kid, and Spawn comes back to life after being dead, and he turns into human form, and he's a white guy in human form, and he's going, "I'm black! I'm a black guy, I'm not a white guy." And as a kid being like, this is a strange thing to have the character have to go through, that he was black in his previous life and now he's a white guy. Like,
and to me it felt like something that could only be written by a white guy.
Yeah, probably.
Something that, like, the only way you can really understand race relations is through the like the vision of a white comic book artist.
Did you ever see for the short period that like HBO had that cartoon version of Spawn,
yeah,
like the intros with Todd McFarlane,
where he was sitting in like
Fia?
A dark room.
Yeah,
do you know Fia?
He was the greasiest, like douchiest guy you could imagine. I mean, pretty much how you might imagine.
My character Spawn is a dark vision. It reminds me of the old Rob Liefeld Levi's jeans commercial.
Mm-hmm.
What?
You never saw that?
Look it up
on YouTube. Look up Liefeld and Levi's.
Made me more mad.
It's him when he was doing X-Force, and he's saying about how, I draw comics in my 501 jeans, and he draws a superhero version of the cameraman interviewing him, and it's a guy with a camera on his head and huge shoulder pads with enormous spikes coming out of them, and it's like, well, that's a Rob Liefeld character. Where's this metal
Add a
arm?
A bunch of really small, unnecessary lines all over everything.
And put some pouches on his on a belt around his thigh.
Yep. Rob Liefeld had this amazing ability when drawing like male figures to always make their crotches look like it's just a bunch of lines radiating from them. Like, that is like the horizon point.
Well,
like, that's where everything emanates from.
But he was basically just trying to fill the space between the enormous thighs of whatever character he was drawing,
which
would dwindle down to their tiny calves and non-existent feet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
'Cause his was a world where mist, foot-level mist, existed everywhere.
Skills. So many skills and abilities.
So it was sad to see. This was like, it was weird to see a movie like this where it was written and directed by a man who has been in comic books since the 80s.
Sure.
And seemed to have been, it was as generic and hacky a piece of work as could have come out of any movie producer who had never seen
a comic book.
Except that it was in Frank Miller's style and had his particular interests. But
it's like, also, it's simultaneously with that and like the most idiosyncratic film you can imagine.
It's the thing, like, in terms of plot, it is the hackiest, most generic thing. But in terms of visuals, it could only have been Frank Miller, you know, with no supervision whatsoever.
I mean, there are two shots in particular of just total weirdness that I enjoyed. One of a tiny head atop a foot just hopping around. And another one, a shot of a porcelain sink where a kitten had just been dissolved. And for some reason, the eyes didn't dissolve. And so two eyeballs are just slowly sliding down the side. Those are two things that, I'm glad I've seen now that I saw The Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, he's created a movie that only somebody who has this complete, like, no-holds-barred love of Frank Miller. Like, somebody who will love Frank Miller no matter what and his works. This is a movie that only somebody like that could really enjoy.
Yeah.
Or possibly an insane person could like this movie. It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I like crazy shit.
But that's the thing. I like crazy movies that don't always make sense. But this just, it was never fun. It was always a chore to, like, just try to decipher it.
I mean, if it was sold to you as an art film rather than a narrative film, maybe it wouldn't be so frustrating.
Well, in the same way, as I said, if I Know Who Killed Me had been in Italian instead of English, people would have been like, oh, what a haunting film.
Use colors.
I know the plot doesn't really make a lot of sense, but the way he splashes color in the frame and
the glass knives.
Glass knives
the
and
robot hands.
Yeah.
You just don't see that in American cinema nowadays.
And Crabman playing a doctor.
Mm-hmm. So good.
But if it was sold to me as like a non-film fantasia on the images of Frank Miller, then like maybe.
Or like, yeah, but you still wouldn't want to watch it. You might want to, you know, you would go to a gallery where it was being projected on a wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And watch 5 minutes of it. Well, and I feel like
used to do music videos of songs in movies, and they'd show like lots of little clips of the movie, and it always felt like they were doing the movie a disservice by just showing like little pieces of footage. That would be the best way to see this movie. Yeah. Is like a music video for like
hopefully with a rock song that has the spirit in it.
Yeah, like a Smashing Pumpkins song.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Smashing Pumpkins are playing a song that's called like Spirit of the Time or something like that.
Sure, that sounds good.
And they're rocking out on top of a building or something, and then there's just clips of from this movie. You'd be like, oh, I wonder who directed this music video.
On the wall of the building at times.
Yeah, or sometimes like that. Sometimes projected in the sky.
Like a bit where you overhear him saying, "My city bleeds."
Exactly.
Or if it was like Evanescence, it would be like projected on the lead singer of Evanescence.
Yeah, like on her bare midriff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know Evanescence that well.
It's got a female singer.
Just imagine like...
Or if it was Blues Traveler.
Just
very similar.
Just imagine any generic rock band with a female singer that might be on the soundtrack to, say, Daredevil.
Okay. Like,
sure.
Oh, and the music and the song has some part that goes like do 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 do, like that's the intro.
No, that sounds.
And then there's probably a spoken word in. That's when it goes, "My city, you know, bleeds. I've got to save it." You know,
I only ever love my city. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was a really bad movie.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say. Yeah,
no, I feel like since we're sort of back from vacation in a way.
Sure.
We should ease into it and not force ourselves.
Okay, we can move along.
Say more stuff about something if we don't.
But
have
we got to do the ratings, right?
Yeah, we got to rate this film. We got to say, is this a good bad movie?
It's gonna be a big twist, I think.
A bad movie.
Twist ending to the podcast,
or a movie that you kind of like, Stuart?
I didn't like this movie at all. Although there were a lot of pretty girls in it, and a decent shot of Eva Mendes' ass, but not worth the price of admission or the time spent.
Yeah, you know what? Like the movie frustrated me because I kept wanting it to make sense, and I wanted like one shot to relate to the shot that followed it, and stuff like that. You know, little stuff. But in terms of just moving along at a good clip, it was okay, and there were some visuals. But overall, like I don't find anything about it like laughable enough or compelling enough to give it more than a bad movie.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way. There were a lot of shots in it that were very pretty, were like neat, like kind of neat effects. But yeah, it was not fun to watch, and it was not fun to. It was hard to make fun of it because there was just not a lot there a lot of the time. Like as crazy as whatever was as crazy as scenes where Samuel Jackson is dressed up like a Nazi and he is talking to a guy strapped in a dentist chair, and then a belly dancer comes out with a huge sword, like. It just wasn't. It just done in a way that made it all very stale. You know? Yeah,
and like, and on that note, one of my problems with the movie is that at no point do you ever genuinely feel there's like that anybody's in trouble. Like nobody's ever in trouble. In this
movie. Well, because it's all cartoons, and the characters are all whispering their lines, and it's shot. You know, like I don't know. It's not done, shot or done in a suspenseful way.
Yeah, anyway, there's no suspense at all. None.
So. And things that would seem fun or quirky in another movie come off as like irritating almost in this one. So
we'll leave it in the toilet that the octopus smashed the spirit with.
Mm-hmm.
And move on to movies that we actually like.
Yay!
The segment that we stuck in. For the sole purpose of proving that we're not just jerks.
Enough of
that.
Oh, sorry.
I think that our listeners like mouth music less than you might imagine.
I don't know. Only one way to find out.
Bobby McFerrin writes in and is like, "I love it."
It's, finally, the Flophouse is getting good.
B. McFerrin, who's this?
Bobby B. M.
McFerrin at acapella.net.
Yep. He probably is not involved with acapella.net.
No, he's too big for that.
Yeah. He actually probably snapped up acapella.com.
Yeah. So, yeah, what movies do you recommend?
Wait, am I recommending first?
Yeah, why don't you go first?
Oh, cheese and tomatoes.
it's very Italian of you.
I wasn't going to... I was originally going to recommend a different movie than I'm recommending now, but I figured because it's a comic book movie we were watching, I'll stick with the theme.
Sure.
And I'll recommend a documentary that I saw recently called Confessions of a Superhero, which I think is available through Netflix only, possibly, and is about... it was lent to me by my coworker Wyatt Snack of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who has a Luke Cage story out in a Marvel comic out now.
Wow!
He lent me this movie about, and it follows three of the people who dress up like superheroes on Hollywood Boulevard outside of Mann's Chinese Theater.
Oh yeah!
And take pictures. Or I guess four people.
I read about this.
Yeah, takes pictures with tourists in exchange for tip money, and it's one of these movies that like it starts off and it's like, aren't these people nuts? But then it wants you to see kind of the inner nobility about them, that they're just trying to make their dreams come true. But it's still dancing around to the fact that these people are much crazier than the movie kind of wants to admit. But it was – the people in it are pretty interesting, and it was well done, and you know, it was entertaining. The only thing that's bad about it is that it's like Morgan Spurlock presents Confessions of a Superhero. So there's like a five-minute like bit – when it starts of Morgan Spurlock in a Superman costume, like, or superhero costume, walking out of a phone booth and being like, "We all want to be superheroes. Here's what I like a lot about this movie.
I'm Morgan Spurlock of Super Size Me."
Yeah, and I fast forwarded through that because I don't really care what he has to say about the film.
Is the movie narrated by Werner Herzog?
No, there's actually no narration.
That'd have been awesome.
"Where they see heroes and fantasy, I see nothing but death and despair."
Oh, man.
My Werner Herzog was more of an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression just then.
A very cerebral Schwarzenegger.
but I actually enjoyed it a lot, and I thought it was very good. And I'll never think about weirdos dressed up in costumes the same way again.
Speaking of Terminator, I watched Terminator again. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator. Sure. I watched Terminator again. I didn't remember that it had so many lasers in it. Really? In like the future,
in
bits?
The flashbacks,
there's
or the flash
lasers
forwards.
In that movie.
Yep,
it's crazy. Okay,
that's a movie that always.
Oh, I thought I was going to seg into a recommendation.
No, there's just a ton of lasers in it.
That's a movie that always surprises me with the fact that there's a nude scene in it.
Yeah, I remember.
I kind of never remember until I'm watching the movie.
Because you only remember the later, more angular Linda Hamilton.
The best thing about that nude scene is that when I was a kid and watching it, I remember watching that nude scene with like a friend of mine, and we were like sitting around giggling because we thought it was hilarious. And my mom got really mad at us and made us turn off the movie. And it wasn't because we were watching
How
the movie.
How dare you laugh at the beautiful act of lovemaking?
Well, that's the thing. Right. It wasn't that we were watching a nude scene or that we were laughing at like, you know, like the act of sex. But she like tried to justify it like, you know, they love each other. They're like, they're making a better future. And after, like, at the time, I was like, yeah, Mom, stop being mad at me. But, like, no, that was a pretty hilarious way to justify her being mad at us for loving the movie.
Their love saved the future.
That's true. It did. I'd have sex with Michael Biehn to save the future.
Sure.
So if you're listening, Michael Biehn.
And you have a rational reason to.
You just have to show up and basically tell Stuart that it's to save the future.
Yeah. I'd come with you if... Oh, man, I'm trying... I can't make a joke. Okay, so my recommendation. I think I'm going to recommend a movie that I don't think I've recommended before, but I might have mentioned. It's a Stuart Gordon movie, director of Reanimator, Stuck, Castle Freak.
From Beyond.
Yeah, From Beyond, absolutely. And it's a movie called King of the Ants. It's a movie that's a little different than some of his other movies because there's no monsters in it.
Wait, there's no, like, Ant King?
No, there's no Ant King in it. Kari Wirr's in it, though, and she's in a lot of monster movies.
What about, like, a mutant ant?
And she's naked in it. Kari Wirr's naked. Okay, but
that's every Kari Wirr film.
Basically, the... it's a thriller where you have kind of a down-on-his-luck guy who's... you know, barely making ends meet, and he ends up taking a job to kill somebody. And the person just happens to be Ron Livingston from Office Space, so that's funny. And he ends up, you know, accepting this job and going through with it and having to kind of like live with the guilt and having to live with the fact that the guys who hired him to kill this guy kind of want him out of the picture at the same time. So, yeah, it's interesting. It doesn't end 100% great, but I think there's definitely some really good stuff in there. So, King of the Ants.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen a lot because I was in Costa Rica. And then
we get it.
All right. But I did.
You're on a tropical vacation.
I did watch the movie Appaloosa actually in Costa Rica on my iPod.
And, the way it was meant to be seen.
Exactly. The sweeping western vistas.
I met the HBO first look making of. Like, the director tried something new with Appaloosa to film a movie for iPod screens in other countries.
No, I watched...
With Appaloosa, I'm really trying to take the western and bring it to a new place.
That's not what Ed Harris sounds like.
Harris impression?
Well, that's what he does. Sounds like when he's off screen.
I see. Actually,
I watched... Sorry, my Ed Harris impression. When I was making Appaloosa, I decided, but...
Apples and pears.
I watched half of it literally in a hammock, so...
The way it was meant to be seen.
I recommend that for anyone who wants a good way of watching a movie.
Your recommendation
in general
is,
or Appaloosa in particular.
So your recommendation is hammocks.
Go on down to the hammock district and get yourself a hammock.
I guess that's I want to do that sometime, that you guys both recommend movies, and I'm like, well, Coca-Cola is a great soda.
I just really enjoy their product.
Now you're ruining the joke when you later on try and do that.
Yeah. Oh, man. When I forget to do
so
it
So what
later
about
on.
Appaloosa did you like or not like?
Well, you know, at the time when it was being reviewed, when it was in theaters, like everyone was sort of like, well, this movie's fine, but it doesn't break any new ground. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, oh, this is great. This movie doesn't break any new ground. Like, it just seems like a classic western, you know, and Ed Harris and Viggo Mortensen are both great, like, western style actors. Like, it's good that they're getting a chance to do a movie like that, and it's got a lot of...
Jeremy Irons is good in it, too.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons is in it. Timothy Spall is in it.
Renee Zellweger. Yeah,
she's the one weak link, but Lance Henriksen is in it.
Oh, yeah.
That guy who was the coach in Major League is in it.
You
know,
I don't
guy
remember.
With, like, that, like, really, like, weird voice.
Let's just say Dennis Farina.
Okay. Let's claim. It's not him, but sure. But,
the guy with
yeah.
a really weird voice, Peter Lorre?
Exactly. It was Peter Lorre. Peter Lorre's corpse. So I just liked it because it was a nice, basic Western.
Sounds very nice. Hmm. Yeah, there's kind of there was a time when you could make...
Hammocks.
You could... when you could... There was about a 30-year period when you could just make Westerns... Actually, more than that, I guess, if you count silent movies. Like, you could just make Westerns that didn't have anything special about them. Mm-hmm. But now it's too bad that every time they make a Western, they feel like there has to be, like, a gimmick in it, you know?
Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Honk shoe.
Oh, no, we got the dreaded honk shoe.
Yep. It's not like it's, like, romantic comedies, I think, are the same way, probably, like...
Yeah, they don't make too many... romantic comedies that are just like funny movies about two people falling in love. They have to have like a gimmick or a thing or a
like
pull.
Like Matthew
or...
McConaughey is visited by ghosts that tell him about what's wrong with him.
That's something that I've only seen the posters and a little bit of the commercials for that movie, Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, and it's like every time I see it and I go, in this movie does Matthew McConaughey play a serial killer?
Yeah.
Like he's being haunted by the girlfriends he murdered? Because I don't know how
no
you would get
how
ghosts.
How likable Matthew McConaughey is, I don't think he could act his way out of that that predicament.
I also think it's funny that it's basically...
It's
seems,
like a romantic comedy version of Kiss the Girls or something.
That I imagine it's the same story as this one episode of the softcore porn show Erotic Confessions, in which a man is visited by on Christmas by the spirits of girlfriends he is broken up with so that they can help him repair his relationship with his wife, and that involves him having sex with all of them.
Sounds like a good movie.
Well, it's a TV show, and it was terrible.
So wait, that's what this movie is about?
I assume this movie is about his past girlfriends coming back to help him become a better boyfriend.
So he doesn't have sex with them?
That I don't know.
It's How weird. Do you have sex with a ghost?
It's like the dream sequence in Ghostbusters, you know? The ghost does all the work.
It's funny that...
Yeah, I guess.
It's funny that by...
I never quite bought that scene.
Well, it's a dream sequence.
Also, yeah. it's a deleted scene from a cut segment where they go to the Museum of Natural History. And a ghost from the Museum of Natural History is involved in it. But they were like, we're cutting this, but we got to use this footage somewhere.
I didn't know that.
That's the story about the ghost blowjob and Ghostbusters.
Let me tell you, was the Museum of Natural History portrayed realistically in that?
Or is it like
Night in the Museum, where it's like they never even been to the Museum of Natural History.
We're going to grind this axe again?
I'm just very mad about it. I'm not looking forward to Night in the Museum 2. I assume Night in the Museum 2 will be at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and it'll be like the Mona Lisa being there and stuff. A go job?
Yeah, well, a GBJ.
It's almost as good as a force job. That's when your girlfriend's a Jedi. She could be doing it from across the room, like if you're at a party or something. And no
like
one knows.
Mara Jade?
Exactly. If you're dating Mara Jade, then you are in luck.
Yeah, that'd be kind of weird. I didn't know they had that much control.
It depends on how much training they've had.
I mean, Yoda, like, if they're not, like, a youngling couldn't do that. I mean, you probably wouldn't want that to happen.
That would be disgusting if it was a youngling, yeah.
Is that illegal in Imperial or Republic society if you're a Jedi to use your abilities to jack somebody off?
I don't know. That's a good question.
So that's what we thought about the spirit. For the Flophouse, I'm Dan McCoy.
We barely cracked the surface of the Star Wars sex. Pantheon.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalen, I guess.
Good night.
Yeah, like, is that legal? Can you be like, hey, this dude used the force on my wiener, and you're like...
My city screams after watching the spirit.
Hey!
Yeah! Beep, boop.
My city's made out of CGI.
My city has a first name. Just a small town girl living in a lonely world.
I just downloaded that on Rock Band. It's totally fun to see.